have to say, the new apples you bought are really, really good.
I'm glad you like them.
These are tasty.
Pinatas.
Oh, hello. The microphones are on again, and we begin the next part of our show. Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com. This is your morning tradition where we are
living our faith.
Mike and Lisa Austin here just talking about the groceries we got over the weekend. These apples are called, what are they called?
Pinatas.
Pinatas.
Yes.
Acuna pinata.
Yeah. Not quite.
No.
But they're nice and crispy and crunchy.
They're a German hybrid because they crossed a couple of three different apples and some sort of tropical fruit.
That's right.
Pinata. Look for them.
They're very delicious.
And speaking of hybriding stuff and things like that, okay, so we're going to get back. We're talking about evolution and science and that with Mr. Garrison, Mr. Robert Garrison, Robert F. Garrison, our friend from Ridgefield, Connecticut, St. Padre Pio's School. He's an author. He's a lecturer. He is a historian. He has his master's in religious studies. And we took the break. Robert, we were talking about hybrids and stuff, and we were getting into that because we've been doing that for a while. And in the apples we bought over the weekend are evidence of that. The pinatas, this is a hybrid. We've been hybriding for a while, right?
You can hybridize something up to a point, and then you just simply reach this particular point where either what is produced is sterile and therefore can't reproduce, so there will be no other race, or it reverts to the original form of what it is you tried to hybridize out of. And so, again, experimentally reproducible. You can't even reproduce the supposed mechanism of Darwinian evolution. And I'm not talking about normal change over time, because that we sometimes get confused. Things do change over time. But we're talking about a change in kind from one creature to another,
right,
that then reproduces itself and goes on. Well, that flies in the face of, you know, all those people that hybridize peas into bigger peas and, you know, the lion into the pussycat and all that other stuff. And I'm being very simplistic, and I'm sure I'll make some people hair hurt.
But you bring up a good point. You bring up a good point in that we do get those.
You know,
we get that confused quite often, I think, almost every time.
When they
talk about evolution, that's a whole different thing, becoming a whole different, you know, that gets evolving from one thing to completely something else, as opposed to a little bit of change over time, which is, it does happen.
But it's just normal. I mean, you know, we're healthier. We're supposedly, you know, on the average taller, though I didn't enjoy that one.
That is interesting, though.
It's just like that. Well, genetics is my particular. The factoid I'll really get into.
Okay.
In the late 80s, early 90s, some geneticist, I mean, the science of genetics was just coming into its own from, I believe it was Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley, as I like to call, you know, hippie heaven. the center of the hippie world from the 60s, okay? Well, there was this team of geneticists, none of whom can be qualified as being religious in any way, shape, or form. All of them kind of, I always picture Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Ghostbusters. Like, I always picture them as that. Harold Ramis. They were like, well, let's see. We know that mitochondrial DNA that passes through the mother, the X chromosome, it accumulates. Like, one generation to another, it doesn't change. It just adds another level, like adding another page to the book. So theoretically, we should be able to unfurl this book page by page and take it all the way back to the beginning.
True,
and
true.
I'm sure at the beginning they were saying, and, you know, we'll prove Darwin and they'll all have to come and thank us because we'll find the missing link. Okay. So they took, basically they had to get specimens of newborn from the placenta of a newborn. They went to every country, every continent, every racial group, every ethnic group. They even went out to Australia, some tribe in the outback that has not seen Western man too much in 200 years. Their custom was to bury the placenta after birth. So they took specimens from every single possible human example you could get. They went back to their lab, they did their thing, and the findings they came up with after they unfolded those sheets of paper, as I call it, was that every single human being walking around on the face of the planet Earth today is descended from the same, and I'll put in the word, original female.
Wow.
They immediately went on to say, we're not calling her Eve. And everybody else, when they put this out, said, well, even if that's true, you know, they can't say that there was one original man. And the criticism was somewhat strange. Now, okay, that would be a one-off interesting thing, except the experiment was repeated, I think the next time it was done by a lab in England, dozens of times since that time. So many times, coming up with the same results, coming up with the exact same results. Hmm. Every time the experiment was repeated. Remember the scientific method.
Right.
Okay. Then the criticism was, well, even if that's true, you can't say that there was a man. There was one original man. Because they couldn't do it with the male DNA yet. I only recently found out, well, by the time you hit the year 2000, 2002 and such, they could. So they said, let's do it with the Y chromosome, the male thing. So they went back, and the pages going back. Every single human being walking around on the face of planet Earth is descended from the same, I will add the word, original male.
Wow. Bingo.
The response from the other scientific communities, and it really is funny, and I'm repeating what I have heard in lectures myself, so the humor is not all mine originally. Mm. Their response was, well, there's no way of knowing if they ever knew each other.
They never shared emails.
Right.
Further, because the way genetics work and the way cells work and the way supposedly evolution works, if you take it back far enough, you should be able to turn a page and come to the point, and I'm sure this is what they were looking for originally, human, and here's where we have half kind of human-looking and half, I don't know, orangutan.
Right.
Here's where we have half Cro-Magnon and half Neanderthal. The problem is when they got to the last page in the book, or what would be the first page in the book, I should say, uh-huh, and turned that page, there was nothing.
Yep.
We appear.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So we
and
are.
Have no genetic antecedents beyond that point.
Was there a page that ever said, let there be man, or anything?
Well, looks would be in the opening dedication or something. Yeah. I don't know. But am I saying these people that are discovering this are religious or doing it for religious reasons? No. Am I saying there's not problems with their research? There probably is. But high science, the science of genetics, in experiments that have been repeated many, many times in the course of the last 20 years or so, is showing that every single human being walking around on the planet Earth today is descended from the same male and the same female. And before them, there seems to have been nothing in their life.
And that's exactly what Catholicism teaches.
And boom, the book of Genesis.
Well, there you go. And you know, am I saying that everything in Genesis is literal? You know, I'm not a scripture scholar. I am not going to go into that. I always love annoying everybody. I annoy everybody. I do have that habit. It's like, he's God. He can do it any way he wants. All I know is he did. All right? But the fact, the general outline of how we come to be, and that we are maybe kind of unique, is borne out by a hard science. I mean, you know, I'm sure there'll be those who try to disprove it or discredit it, and some of those scientists, God help them, if they suddenly find religion, then they'll totally be discredited.
Oh,
but,
sure.
And you will always have...
They are reporting the data they've come up with.
Yeah, you'll always have those scientists who try, and those outside the scientific realm, who try to disprove it. You'll always have... I don't think we'll ever have anybody... ever a time where there is unanimous agreement that, look at that, one man, one woman, and we just appeared. I just don't think that. Modernists will not allow that to happen in any
way. Well, no, they won't. But one of the ways you know that there may be something to this is, see, they do have to start, and they do have to explain this somehow, because the particular researcher I'm talking about said there's only two explanations for this. There are only two possible explanations for this. I realize this is a modern person who is not himself, as far as I know, religious, but was not, as I said, he passed away. But he says that there's only two possible explanations. He says either it's divine intervention or it's extraterrestrial intervention.
Oh.
But
okay.
It is not, well, you can, obviously the divine is extraterrestrial, but he said, but but it didn't just, like, come out of something else. We are unique. So the only way they can, if you want to know why, now this could be another whole show, why is it that the whole ET, extraterrestrial, ancient aliens things has become such a big industry? And it's not just entertainment, though they are very entertaining sometimes. Science has, and I mean science, and not all hard scientists, but people who think they know a little science, they have got to come up with a non-religion, a non-religious explanation for things that hard sciences are starting to show. And this is also in the world of archaeology. I mean, they're finding archaeological things where traditional archaeology that has sort of like stayed in the timeline that really, well, really Darwin gave them. Well, they're finding things that are out of that timeline, and it's like, but they can't be there. Well, they are. There they are. Mm-hmm. And the more they find them, they can't just say it was, you know, somebody built this fake 100 years ago just to make some money. You know, when you have some dull, boring German archaeologist find something in the steppes of Turkey that is 1,000, 2,000 years older than anything they found in Sumeria and seems to predate and is a style that has never been seen before, and seems to be a ritual center in an age supposedly where man hadn't discovered religion yet because we hadn't developed that far. Well, that's thrown archaeology into a tizzy.
Yeah.
Archaeologists love us because they just dig things up and say, "Ooh, look what we found."
Right.
The Darwinians can't deal with it because it throws their timeline off. And real science respecters, and I'd like to think I respect science, okay, show me what you got, you know.
Yeah.
Discover it, dig it all up, we'll look at it, we'll investigate it, and then we'll talk about it.
So now they're saying to justify it, that it's coming from Mars or wherever.
Well, that's the thing. See, if human beings can't have done this because they're not at the right point in evolution, a la, you know, Master Darwin, then it must have been E.T.
Yeah.
As far as evolution, again, Darwinianism, I don't want to just, you know, tag all evolution. The Darwinian explanation and then the origin of life by accident, which Darwin actually didn't say. He presumed life already existed. Darwin doesn't actually give us an explanation for where life came from. His thing starts with there being life already, some, you know, molecule or whatever. Sir Francis Crick, again, to genetics, the co-discoverer of the DNA helix. So we're not talking about a scientific lightweight. When they asked him about, he characterized himself as a socialist, I think, and agnostic. So again, he had no religious saw to grind. They asked him about the whole Darwinian thing and how life and just spontaneous generation and all this and just accidental things. His comment was, you would have a better chance of constructing a modern 747 jet by passing a tornado through a junkyard than by life as we know it having evolved by accident.
Wow.
Okay, now again, he then, of course, went the ET route and said, you know, the Earth had to be seeded by, you know, life forms or molecules or something from space or rocket. But, the point is, you always have to be careful and you have to be specific. The problem with Darwinianism, as I like to call it, that they teach in school, and you know that, you know, when they what they will get militant about, if you sit there, as many Christians and many Catholics do, and say, okay, we accept Darwin, we accept evolution, we accept the fact that we've grown, okay, that's fine, except God is behind it. He's the one that started the whole process going.
Yeah.
Now, technically, nothing in Darwin, strictly speaking, he doesn't say anything about that, as far as I know. I'm not an expert on him, but see, the theory they teach in schools now is called Neo-Darwinism. And I don't know what the neo comes from or what they're diverging from in some areas, but they basically have a definition of it, and that is the evolution of all life by undirected accidental causes. See, it's not the evolving part that's religiously dangerous or bad or untrue. It's that it must be an accident. Mm. I mean, how many times times have you or most normal people gone out on a starry night and looked at the constellations and was like, and we say wistfully, man, who can look at this and doubt that there's a God?
Right.
Because
we certainly couldn't do this. Well, if you said that in a college classroom, you'd be failed if you were taking a course on evolution or science. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can accept every single aspect of the evolutionary theories, and there are several of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that in and of themselves, there is within them the sign that there is a plan here, a design. You'll be thrown out.
Yeah.
You'll get an F. You'll fail.
And
because that's what's not allowed.
Well, now we get into a whole religious liberty discussion. And dare I say, I don't know how close are we to not just failed, but jailed. Failed and jailed.
Well, it doesn't have to be a religious liberty issue because you can never say through empirical material science, the people who would hold this particularly. I don't know if you've ever seen the DVD that Ben Stein did called Expelled.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the Darwinian controversies and the problem of people who simply are called intelligent designers. They're not creationists. They make no statement on who did the designing. The only thing that they say is you can look into the reality of the scientific world of man, the human person, or anything in nature, and you can see there things that can best be explained as the result of design. Now, maybe it is E.T., because they take those steps. Maybe it is E.T. Maybe it is an alien from another planet. Maybe it is this. Maybe it is. All we're saying is it can't be accidental, because they calculated it. You'd have to put, let's say if you started in the front of an average church and go all the way to the front door of the church, out the door, and across the street, put the number 10 and add the number of zeros, you could fit in all that space.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the probability of having the same accident that would have had to occur, occur something like 700 times, just to get the first, what do they call it, the acid building block of light.
Right.
Amino acid.
The primordial sludge.
The primordial sludge. In order for it to be primordial to get zapped by the electricity, which, by the way, is only a possibility. See, they have so many possibilities that they put it to be. This theory is actually funny. But the number of accidents that would have to occur and all the result the same way, I just think it's theoretically impossible.
Hey,
and
you know what? It worked in the movie Frankenstein. Okay. Yeah, Robert F. Garrison is our good friend from St. Padre Pio Academy out in Ridgefield, Connecticut. He's a historian, an author, a lecturer, master's in religious studies, and just a fun guy to talk to. By the way, I'm going to leave you with this. You mentioned Charles Darwin's uncle. You couldn't think of it. Wouldn't it be funny if it was his old weird uncle that always showed up at Christmas, like Uncle Ralphie? Ralphie Darwin. Just, no offense to guys named Ralph. Now all guys named Ralph are going to go, what? I'm just kidding.
I'll end it with this. I don't know if anybody ever gets a chance, they have, and the museum is like a cathedral. It may have been an old cathedral in England, the one that's set up to honor Darwin. There's a statue of Darwin there. Beautiful, very well-done statue, very realistic looking. And he's literally enshrined. It's like a shrine in a Catholic church. He's off against the wall. He's got an altar rail around him, a border thing to protect the statue. Yeah. But it's very realistic looking. And if you look at his face, the artist was excellent because every time I look at this, they are the deadest eyes. I don't mean that there's no eyes there. It's not a Roman statue. His expression, his look, every time I look at that statue, I'm saying, what was he thinking while he was sitting for this? Is this all there is?
Right.
Look it up. Find the statue and look at the face and see if I'm just hallucinating.
I want to look at that now.
Yeah,
maybe that's the image we'll use on the blog when we tell everybody about this. That'd be funny.
Okay.
That would be funny. Robert F. Garrison, it's been a pleasure as always, my friend. And we'll chat again soon, huh?
Thank you very much, both of you. It's a pleasure being with you.
He's a very knowledgeable man on a number of different levels.
He certainly is.
Let's be honest. All right, Mike and Lisa Austin here. Thank you for being part of our day. We're going to close up our Your Morning Tradition show coming up. I always like to end on kind of a, I don't know, a little...
lighter note?
Human interest sort of, yeah, happy note. Although, talk about Mr. Garrison is a little, can be lighthearted at times.
It can. It can.
Magnificat Radio here at MagnificatMedia.com. Your Morning Tradition on Leap Day, where we are.
Living our faith.
And now, as the sun begins to rise over the far horizon, we welcome you to Monday morning. Sun ought to be out by now, I would think.
I think so.
We're in a cave down here in our studio.
We can't see it.
We build a new house. Studio?
Upstairs.
Above ground with a big old window.
Let the sun shine in.
Well, although, with a window means you get outside noise. So
uh-oh,
that's bad. We have to have a booth like this, and then we go outside to see the window. But either way.
We have like a double pane window, not, or
yeah,
like a triple pane, or quadruple pane, or, you know, really thick pane.
That would be a pain to put in. Anyway, we welcome you to our little digression here called Your Morning Tradition. Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com, where we are.
Living our faith.
Our thanks again to Mr. Garrison, a good friend of ours. And we've tried to establish sort of a routine. He's expressed an interest in being on, and we have asked. And so we're working on a little more regularity. We have several
yes,
folks that we work regular with. So.
Yes, we do.
This week, of course, you'll have Louis Tafari coming up later with learning about the Roman liturgy later in the week. Every Friday, we've got
Church and State.
Church and State,
mm-hmm,
with Stephen Cox. And so anyway, so Mr. Garrison, one of our regulars, I think. Lisa, I just, to leave everything on sort of an up note this morning, sort of a happy little interesting human interest type note.
Okay.
We were talking evolution earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then this would be one of those bumps in the evolutionary channel.
It would?
That they can't explain.
Okay.
Feet that are, okay, I don't know how they size feet. If you sell shoes, then, and I say evolutionary channel, those of you are going like, oh, Mike said evolution. I don't, I it's a joke, okay? All right. I don't know how you measure feet, but each size is not an inch, is it? Like, say size 12 doesn't mean you have 12 foot long or 12 inch long feet.
Oh.
No.
I don't think so. I'm not sure how that, the measurement of the, all I know is you step on that little scale.
Yeah, the little thing.
And they measure your, the length of your foot and the width
yeah,
of it.
Which, can I say this? Anymore, unless you go to a high-end shoe store, those things don't exist. You go and you buy shoes off the rack, you try them on yourself.
Yes.
And then you ask somebody who doesn't know anything about shoes, you got anything in a different size? Let me go back and see. And then they, you know.
Yeah.
You wait on yourself, just like everything. You pump your own gas. Everything's yourself today.
Yeah, it is.
But back in the day, when you would go and sit down, and they would bring that metal scale out. There's a word for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd scan, you know, they'd slide that slider up and down
You'd
your foot.
You'd have to stand up.
I loved that thing.
You did?
It was so nice. Because first of all, you take off your shoes, you're barefoot. You know, your little sock. And you put it on that nice, cool metal. Oh, did that feel good. And then the guy slides that thing along your feet. It's like a little rub.
Oh.
This was back when I didn't think feet were all that creepy.
Right. When you were littler.
When I was a little boy and I didn't mind people touching my feet.
Yeah.
I didn't mind feet.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
So, and they'd slide that thing along the side. It was like a little mini foot massage. Thank you. Can you size my feet again, sir?
And then you'd have to put the foot up on that little bench.
Yeah.
And they would come and sit on it.
Yeah,
and then
like a footstool.
They would put the shoe on your foot.
Mommy, can we go get me some more shoes just so the man can slide the thing on my feet?
You felt important.
I did. And then I would, can you please slide that along my feet again? Mrs. Austin, your son is strange. They would say that. Anyway. What would a size 26 shoe look like?
Wow.
Yeah, and not a clown. Jason Rodriguez of Venezuela has the world's biggest feet. Size 26 shoes. He can't buy shoes at Kohl's, okay?
Of course
he
not.
He can't buy shoes at Payless. He has a German shoemaker come and measure his feet and custom make shoes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
For about 40 years, this guy's been making shoes for this
dude. Is he like 10 feet tall? How tall is he?
I'm looking. Doesn't say.
26.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Rodriguez is 7 feet 3 inches tall.
Wow.
That's tall.
It's tall.
He's not the tallest dude in the world, but
no.
For 40 years, this guy, Mr. Georgie Wessels, has been coming measuring his shoes and custom making shoes for free for this man.
Aw, that's nice.
Yep. On average, he keeps them in about 3 or 4 pairs of shoes. And there you go.
Yeah,
how about
that? Right, because you'd have to get the arch right and everything so that he wouldn't harm his
here you
foot
go.
And his body.
Size 26 shoes relates in inches to about 16 inches.
Oh, my.
Size 26 is 16 inches worth of shoe.
He's over a foot. Like a foot and a half.
Yeah, way over. Yeah, a foot and a half. So take a foot, take a yardstick. His feet can only fit 2 feet. Two of his feet side,
or
know,
like
toe
a third
to heel,
of a yardstick.
Toe to heel would be a yardstick. Foot and a half and a foot and a half.
Wow. There you go. Holy cow.
Roughly a foot and a half. Not exactly a foot and a half. Do the math, but you get what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
I bet he's a good swimmer. Yeah. You imagine that. What is that? He's got like a rooster tail up in the air behind him.
He'd
What's
be
that?
Pretty fast,
that's
wouldn't
just,
he?
Yeah, that's just Jason Rodriguez swimming. Anyway, so imagine that when you're trying to get your shoes together. I wonder if he had flip-flops in the summertime.
Oh, uh-uh.
And they'd fly, they would sound like guns going off. That would be wild, man.
It would be.
Anyway, so there you go. We end your morning tradition with you thinking about feet.
And evolution.
And evolution. I don't know. It's all gone bad on us. Mike and Lisa Austin here. Our thanks to Mr. Garrison. Our thanks to Stephen Cox. And our thanks to you for being part of our day. Magnificat Radio and MagnificatMedia.com. Your morning tradition where we are.
Living our faith.
Oh, wait. Lisa?
Yes.
Praise be Jesus and Mary.
Now and forever.